It is really, really, really bad conversion rate. But I really don't look at it as a loss because when I am doing door to door, I feel like every door that I knock helps me a little bit more at sales, you know? It's been really beneficial for me to overcome like social anxiety and stuff like that.
Welcome to Future Titans, where we spotlight remarkable middle and high school entrepreneurs building real businesses that solve real problems. Every founder we speak to has received a $1,000 Formidable Fellowship grant. It's not equity, it's not debt, just a bit of inspiration capital to say keep doing what you're doing. If you're a student entrepreneur, we'd love to support you too. Just visit formidablefellowship.org to apply for a grant. It takes less than 5 minutes. And if you believe in empowering young builders, consider supporting our mission. All contributions are tax deductible. Now on to the conversation. All right. Hey, everybody. We have another amazing entrepreneur here today, Eli Henriksen. Eli, mind introducing yourself? Maybe just tell us where you're from, what school you go to, what grade you're in.
Sure. My name's Elijah Henriksen. I'm 16. I'm a junior at Arlington Heights High School in Fort Worth.
Okay, nice. For those of you who listen to the podcast, Texas is a hotbed of young entrepreneurs. I think, you know, Eli's probably one of five that we had from the area. So there's something going on in Texas for sure. So Eli, you're the only entrepreneur in this class of Formidable Fellowship grantees who actually operates two businesses. So why don't we start with, can you just tell us what those two businesses are, their names, and what they do?
Yeah. So I started Ridgely Dog Walking Co., which is a dog walking service and pet sitting, stuff like that. And then Ridgely Landscaping Co., which is landscaping, lawn mowing.
Cool. That's great. All right. And so, yeah, that's super unique. You know, I wouldn't, they're at least on appearances, not maybe a ton of customer overlap initially. So, what is impressive, I think, is the scale you've gotten them both to. So give us a sense for revenue last year on both the landscaping business and the dog walking business.
Yeah, so with the dog walking business, I did just over 9K in revenue, and in the landscaping business, I did a little over 4K in revenue.
Okay, amazing. All right, so 13K, let's call it, between the two businesses last year. So Eli, you know, one of the things that you often hear from folks is focus. And, you know, you've started two businesses, both doing kind of real revenue, especially while you're in high school. Walk us through how did you start them both together or did one come first? And then how, what made you add on a second business?
Yeah, so I kind of always have worked outside in my neighborhood and everything. Probably the landscaping went first, but I remember I was mowing this lady's lawn and she asked me to walk her dog one day, and just for walking her dog in 30 minutes, obviously it was significantly less effort than mowing a lawn, you know, and I was just like, wait, I could get used to this. So then I just kind of went all in with the dog walking business. And then once I got a car and everything and I got more money, I was able to upgrade my equipment a little bit and start to expand the landscaping too. So
okay,
I've kind of always done I've done.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. All right. So I think that I made an assumption initially that these businesses didn't have any crossover, but you were actually mowing somebody's lawn and that turned into the first dog walking customer, which is great. And so walk me through how you're growing. You know, I think the dog walking business is obviously bigger. You know, what's been the secrets to growing that business to, you know, around 9K in revenue? How are you getting your customers?
So mainly by word of mouth. Recently I haven't been able to do as much as door to door as I'd like. That's another really good way. And flyers too.
So Eli, you mentioned door to door. Walk me through, what's that sales pitch look like?
Biggest thing, that I've found in sales, is people buy from you when you understand them, not when they understand you. So the biggest thing is just not to be too pushy at all and to be just genuine when you talk to people.
So, you know, and so let's say you, you know, you're going door to door, right? You're in the hot Texas heat. What's the, I answer the door, right? What's that conversation look like? You know, what's a good conversation look like?
Well, usually I'll have my like Ridgely Dog Walking Co shirt on and everything. And honestly, I make most sales when the dog comes running out and I like woo the dog. I'm pretty good with animals. I'm usually able to contain them pretty well, so that usually helps. Also, I don't know, just complimenting, like subtle compliments help a ton. I got a great client off of asking him about his GTR. He had a an R33 GTR that he imported from Japan. And I asked him about it and we talked about it for 30 minutes and he was like, oh, you walk dogs? Yeah. Come walk my dog every day. And then that ended up being, like a huge client, you know?
Okay. That's amazing. So
yeah,
you're actually, it's a really interesting point here is that you're not just talking to them about dog walking necessarily, right? You're trying to find something upon which to, you know, kind of just have a shared interest or something, you know, a compliment, like you said. Do you have sort of a set of compliments in your bag of tricks that you like? Is it, you know, complimenting their shoes or is it their shirt or is it, you know, their car?
Usually it's anything that is unique, you know? I feel like with most conversations that you have with people, generally both parties are kind of uninterested. It's usually kind of small talk, but there's a few topics that you can see people visually light up about, you know? So, I mean, I would say just anything unique, you know, like for instance, that car, not everybody has an R33 Skyline. If anybody who has that car, well, loves that car, you know, or it could be a t-shirt, it could be shoes. I'm really into sneakers, so anytime I see a sneakerhead, I'm like, and it's like a real niche shoe and you know what it is, it's usually appreciated. I don't know, stuff like that.
Okay, now that makes a lot of sense. So I mean, you take interest in other people and then they're more interested in you, which I think is kind of, you know, one of the cardinal rules of business.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. That's great. So you're doing door to door. I'm just curious, what's the conversion, right? Because I think for other young entrepreneurs listening, the idea of door to door kind of scares the heck out of them. Mm-hmm. Let's say you knock on 100 doors, like how many dog walking customers on an average day are you getting from that?
It is really, really, really bad conversion rate. But I like to think 1 in 40, you know? But I really don't look at it as a loss, because when I am doing door to door, I feel like every door that I knock helps me a little bit more at sales, you know? So while it might be kind of disappointing, to not get amazing returns every time, not every time I knock a door, there's going to be a sale. It's been really beneficial for me to overcome like social anxiety and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned word of mouth. Do you incentivize that? Do you say, hey, listen, if you get me a customer, I'll give you a week of free dog walking? Or is it just people love your service and they just tell their other, you know, friends and acquaintances at the dog park about you?
I haven't really incentivized anything, but I don't know. Just with socializing and everything, I've landed myself into some really good spots to network. One of my dog walking clients, Susan, the main one currently, she had me like help out for a party of hers. It was like ladies of Ridgely or something. But it was 40 women that live in the neighborhood that I actively work in, you know? So it was amazing. I got like a ton of clients off of that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
All right. That's great. Okay. And so there's a certain level of fearlessness that I see that you have, like, you know, not, I mean, I would say for me, like going door to door, I mean, I did it when I was selling stuff in Cub Scouts and like my heart would be beating 6,000 beats per minute every time I knocked on the door. Right. And so I'm just curious, where did that come from? Like, did you grow up in a household of entrepreneurs? Were you, you know, like, yeah, just, you know, where is, if you can trace it back to something, where do you think that comes from?
Kind of the opposite. I kind of grew up in a house of fear. I grew up a lot with my grandma, and I think most old people are like that, but they kind of think like the world is ending all the time and they go on rants. So I've always just kind of wanted to grab life and see how far I can go, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you've like figured it out really early.
Life is too short to be fearful.
Okay. Cool.
It's no way to live.
Yeah. What got you into entrepreneurship? Like, were you always you mentioned the lemonade stand. So were you always the kid who was, you know, kind of, you know, selling candy out of their locker and kind of doing those hustles? Or did you work some jobs and you were like, nah, like working for other people isn't for me? Like, what made you kind of really turn it on and launch these two businesses and make them so successful?
I think that, I have been doing it for a long time. I think it's all just kind of been building up. I'm really excited. I'm at a really cool point in my life now because I'm starting to get the resources that I need to start getting even bigger. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, that's great. And so what does that look like? And maybe which business are you talking about? Is that the dog walking business? Is that the landscaping business? And when you say resources, is that, obviously money maybe underlies that, but like, what do you need to scale these businesses?
A car, being able to drive is amazing. Time and freedom. And just like, I'm still a minor in everything. It was kind of weird, like being 14 or 15, like being gone all day in the summer, telling my mom that I'm working, you know, and I come back with like $100 or whatever. I don't know. Like, so just getting the time, the freedom, the money. Yeah.
Definitely. And did you buy your own car with the money that you've made from the business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. How'd
that feel?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. It was the best feeling. I've been saving since like eighth grade.
Okay. Okay. What'd you get?
I got a 2012 Honda Accord. It's great. And then I actually ended up selling it for more, and then I ended up buying my Xterra now for really cheap. That was a whole thing. That was great.
Okay. All right. So you're even an entrepreneur in your car purchase. You made money on your first one. Okay. Then you upgraded to your next car. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's great. And so what does that mobility do for the business? Does that just mean you can cover more ground from a dog walking perspective, or from a, like, which business does that help most?
Both. So Ridgely Landscaping Co. and Ridgely Dog Walking Co., they started with me on foot. Didn't have a car or anything. I would drag my lawnmower all around my neighborhood. I probably looked like a dork. I felt like a dork. But having transportation is great. And then what really made Ridgely Dog Walking Co. was I got gifted a Honda Metropolitan, which is like a Vespa. And for the 6 months, well, I guess probably about a year before I could get a car, I rode the scooter around, and also kind of looks like a dork, but I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. It was great.
Okay. That's
very
great.
Very cold.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So you've grown the business. So besides word of mouth and door to door and flyers, it sounds like those are the three primary channels for the business in terms of customer acquisition. Have you tried anything online? Have you tried, you know, Nextdoor or Facebook, you know, groups or anything?
Yeah. I tried with that. I didn't really have all that much success. And I haven't really done paid ads or anything. Just because, honestly, I don't really know anything about paid ads. I don't know the conversion rate, how it works, how I would want to go about that. I've definitely been staying in my comfort zone, I would say, more with the marketing side of things, which I'm in the future like to work out better strategies.
Okay, that makes sense. How did you learn, you know, whatever you've learned about business, you didn't kind of grow up around entrepreneurship, it doesn't sound like. So it sort of wasn't in the, it wasn't sort of the dinner table conversation necessarily. I know you take an entrepreneurship class at your high school. So was that a big part of how you've learned about business, or what, you know, where is all the sort of knowledge that you have acquired come from? And obviously some of it's just getting out there and trying stuff, but yeah, where would you say you've learned the most?
YouTube is great. Rich Dad Poor Dad was the first like financial book I read that I really enjoyed. And Alex Ramosi, I remember last time you asked me, anybody that wanted to shout out, definitely Alex Ramosi. I don't know why I blanked last time, but yeah, he's great.
What's it about Alex? Like what kind of things do you feel like you've picked up from him that have been either helpful already in the business or that you hope to integrate into the business in the future?
Just aggressive growth. He talks about having self-discipline and doing things quickly, you know, which I really like. What else does he talk about? Budgeting. A lot of his budgeting videos are great. And just like saying no is like a big emphasis on that. It's like kind of living for you and your own goals. I don't know, I think that's some of the stuff I've like learned from this stuff.
Yeah. Have you had to do that in the business? Like sometimes have you gotten opportunities which are like maybe compelling on one hand, but there's something about them, you know, maybe the customer seems really challenging or it's really far and outside of kind of the area you tend to do work in, you know, where you've kind of had to maintain that discipline and say no?
Yeah, definitely. I find it's with people who haggle, which are like, I understand if people are on a budget and like sometimes I can work with it, but like most of the time, the people who haggle are the people who expect the most of you. And then when the job is finished, they will find like something to nitpick about it. I've always found the best business transactions are when both parties feel like there's value being given, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so let's talk about pricing, right? Because I'd say when we talk to young entrepreneurs, this is an area like from their first sale to now, they've learned a ton, right? Like the first time they really underpriced it, they were like, there's no way I can make money on this. In when they reflect on it, what does pricing look like? You know, when you're doing dog walking, you know, what did it look like when you started? Maybe let's start there.
Yeah, when it started, I was doing it for like dirt cheap. Just because I wanted to get sales and everything. But the more and more that I have done it, I started running it like it was a business and being professional and, you know, and with that, of course, the price went up. Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm gouging, but I'm definitely not the cheapest dog walker around. But the advantage with me versus going with like Rover or anything else is like I truly do make a connection like with the dogs and with the owners too. It's great.
Eli, on pricing, right? One of the things that we hear when we talk to entrepreneurs is from their first sale to how they price today, they've evolved quite a bit. So maybe walk me through what pricing looks like in the dog walking business and how you got there.
So for big dogs, it's 25 per dog and then $5 extra. So if I'm walking like two dogs at a time, it'd be like $30 a walk. And then for smaller dogs, it's like a $20 minimum. So whether I'm walking in for 15 minutes or 30. And then it's the same like $5 per extra dog.
Charge. Okay. And in the beginning, when you didn't know necessarily, were you looking at Rover or something and just like figuring out how to price on that? Or were you just kind of like winging it and you were like, I just want to make some money, so I'll just charge whatever?
Yeah, I was definitely a lot more flexible
Okay.
in the beginning. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. That's great. Let's go back to school a little bit, right? You are taking some entrepreneurship classes or class in school. I'm just curious, like from a, as it relates to your business, like, you mentioned YouTube is probably the primary thing that you're using to learn. Like, what have you learned in school that maybe has helped with your business, if anything?
Probably structure is probably like the biggest takeaway. And just responsibility, keeping things on time.
Okay. As you've been making money, I'm curious, has your perceptions of or what what folks might call your relationship with money changed, right? Now that you're making it, like, are you just more cautious with it? Are you more, do you save it, more because you understand like how hard it is to make? Or are you like, oh no, this is great. Like, I'm gonna go, I can go spend with my friends and me, and we can have a great time. Like, I'm just curious how making money on your own has maybe changed your perceptions of it.
It's changed a lot. It's definitely made me a lot more grateful of my parents. Oh my gosh, life is so expensive. So yeah, I try and save half of my income just with like car breaking down, stuff like that. It's not always perfect, but I've built myself a good pad in case anything happens. I almost don't really have like the urge to spend a lot anymore. I kind of used to, and there's like a few things that I like really want, but I've gotten pretty used to sticking to my budget. It hasn't been that bad, and just l learning how to spend money on the things that actually bring me pleasure, opposed to just like letting your money fizzle away on stupid stuff like eating out, you know?
Right. Okay. And you learned budgeting, you said, was that Alex Hormozi who kind of like gave you the basics of that? Okay. All right. That's
Definitely.
amazing. Yeah. So, I think we talk a lot about financial literacy in schools. In the case of Eli, he learned it by YouTube, by Alex, which is fantastic. Where do you see the business is growing or going this year, right? We're early in 2025. Are you focused on one more than the other? And, if you look back on this year, what does a good year look like? Like, how big do you want them to be?
That's to be determined. I'm really struggling now because I'd like to grow it really big, and I feel like I can, but I have to do school, and I do good in school, and it's just that's the big of it all, you know? So I'm probably gonna keep it where I can maintain it. So it's probably going to be in the 10 to 15 grand mark. But granted, I don't work a lot in a week, which is really, really great.
Okay, that's amazing. I mean, 10 to
Yeah.
15K and having it not be taken over your life is quite an accomplishment. Have you considered for either a business hiring folks, you know, other people at your school or, you know, contractors to, you know, where you're not having to do all of the work yourself?
Yeah, I've thought about it. I would just have to work out the logistics, like how payment would work, how I would pay them, and just in my experience, I hire my friends a lot for Rigid Landscaping Co. Nobody is going to run your business like you do. So it's almost kind of scary, like lending it off to someone. But
so, you know, on employees or having folks do some of the work, yeah, it's always kind of a challenge because you kind of always worry that they're not going to do the same, put in the same level of care maybe that you would put in because you're the founder and you're the entrepreneur behind the whole thing. It's also probably, it is absolutely though the requirement to scaling a business is that you got to enlist other people who are like-minded. And so some of that is culture, some of that is process. A lot of that is just recruiting the right people, right? But yeah, it is, you know, I've built businesses and that's always like it's always a challenge, like knowing when to let go. But yeah, I think in order to become big, you got to start working. It becomes important to work on the business and not in the business all the time. So that's certainly important. Just last kind of couple of things. One is, why two businesses? Like, you know, why not go all in on one? Is it just because it's easy to manage the two and you've got a bunch of good customers on both and they just kind of keep generating revenue, you know, versus, yeah, maybe that's the reason, but I'm curious, why not go all in on one of them?
Well, I enjoy both, and both of which, they allow me to not work that much, which is like my biggest goal. Yeah, why do I do both? I don't know. I think I'm just crazy.
All right. Well, no, I mean, you know, I think it sounds like they don't consume every waking hour that you have, which is good. And so, Eli, you're a junior now or you're a sophomore?
Yeah, I'm a junior.
Junior. Okay. So what do you think kind of post high school life looks like? Is it go to college? Is it continue to be, you know, build bigger and badder businesses as an entrepreneur? Like, you know, and obviously you've got some time so things can change, but I'm just curious where your head's at right now.
Yeah, so the plan right now is definitely college. So I plan on going the most cost-effective route for college. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. I have a lot of different options. I am going to work out everything soon with FAFSA and scholarships and figure out what I can do. But if not, I think most likely I'll go to community college, TCC, and continue building businesses. Honestly, that kind of sounds amazing. Only like going to school 3 days a week and having all day to build businesses. Oh my gosh, it'd be great. That's probably what I'm going to do. I don't know if I want to go to a big university and be trapped in a dorm for a year and getting a bunch of debt.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, clearly you've been able to grow, you know, kind of two businesses to around, you know, what, 14K. And that's with managing what, a full workload at school and clubs and athletics and the whole deal, like all of normal school life. So, yeah, you know, I guess with focus, it's sort of kind of it's cool to imagine what you could do with these businesses or even different businesses. So that's great. There's a lot of young entrepreneurs I think who'd love to have a business, you know, put aside two businesses that are as successful as yours. Any advice, you know, that you would give to them, or if you could even go back in time and give yourself as you were starting, you know, to an entrepreneur with sort of the hope of starting something?
Yeah. My biggest advice would just be do it. It's the biggest thing. I think that a lot of people say they're going to do something and they convince themselves they're going to do something and they get the dopamine hit of that. But just actually doing it and being okay with it not being great is just really important. It's really discouraging. You fall on your face a lot when you're starting out and you don't know what to do. So many questions. Just doing it and not being too hard on yourself is really important.
Yeah. Is there an example of something, Eli, that you recall of sort of falling on your face? Because I think right now somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh, it's easy for that guy to say he's already got 14K business, you know, and he's, you know, crushing it. Is there something you look back on and you were like, oh man, that was like, that hurt, or that was a challenging sale, or that was a challenging experience? Anything that sort of jumps to memory?
I've just been yelled at a lot, you know, by like people just knocking on doors. I think that's probably like the worst experiences that I've had.
Why do they yell? What are they yelling about? They just don't like you knocking on their door?
Yeah. So like, I remember one time I had knocked on this guy's door and I'd already like walked all the way down the street, like back to my scooter and everything. And he like pulled up and was like, why did you try to open my door? And I was like, I didn't try to open your door. It's like, I saw you on the cameras. You tried to, I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, just people being shysty, you know, that's probably the worst part. And just bad clients. I've had probably one bad client experience. And it was with a lady who haggled.
Okay. All right. So stay away from hagglers if there's one lesson to be learned here. Okay. Yeah. But I guess like one client out of many that you've had. So it sounds like the majority, the vast majority of your customers are actually, you know, they're great.
Yeah. It's been really good. I found that like a lot of the things that people fear will happen never actually do happen.
Eli, you mentioned a few folks in our conversation that you admire that have been kind of influential. You know, YouTube, obviously, as a platform being something that you've learned a lot from. Who are folks, you know, either businesses, and it could be folks, you know, locally as well, who've been really supportive of you and your entrepreneurship, or that you've learned a lot from, or that you just, you know, maybe you just look at and admire a ton?
Yeah.
Anybody come to mind?
For sure. My neighbor, Cooper Palacio. I met him because I asked him about his lawn. He ended up saying no. But we're talking at a chili cook-off and he does real estate. So right now I'm managing one of his Airbnbs. So I'm not really making much money off of it. I'm only making like $25 a visit, but he brings me through the numbers and everything. And he like shows me how he runs it, and I'm getting like an inside look without having to actually use my own money. So it's really, really cool. I'm learning a lot there. Rich Dad Poor Dad is really good.
Okay. And then maybe finally, we talked about potentially going to college and, you know, working on your business. And, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, you know, I don't know, pick a time frame in the future, 5 years, 10 years, like what's the dream look like? What would you love to have accomplished? How would you like to be living? You know, what does that look like?
I would, in 5 to 10, I'm going to say 10 years from now. In 10 years from now, I would like to have the freedom to have a slow day and enjoy it. Yeah, I think that's just something that people take granted a lot. It's just like having a slow day. That's kind of what I'm building everything towards, is financial freedom and independence, you know? I don't want to have to clock into work every day if I don't want to, you know? And hopefully I can get to a point where I can maintain that for the rest of my life.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I think, like, it's a really wise insight. You know, I think wealth is sort of owning your schedule, right? It's owning your calendar, right? And if, like,
absolutely,
if everybody can put stuff on it, or other, if you're obligated to a bunch of other folks, like, irrespective of how much money you have, you don't necessarily actually have wealth, right? Because you can't, the most sort of finite resource, you actually don't have control over it, right? Which is your time. So yeah, super insightful, Eli. This has been great. We'll keep kicking butt. You know, thanks for making the time and sharing your advice to young entrepreneurs, and congrats on all on the businesses you built. Actually, I forgot, with the $1,000 Formidable Fellowship grant, you know, where do you, you know, any experiments you're going to run with that, or where, you know, do you have a sense for where you're going to invest that?
Definitely. Once wrestling season is over, I plan on going and making yard signs. So I'm going to put those in, well, I'm going to try and put them in my clients' lawns, if they allow me. I already have a bunch of flyers. I'd like to get more t-shirts. I think it'd be cool if I had like 3 or 4 so I could just wear it all the time.
Okay, nice. That's great. I love it. Yeah, it's great brand building. So yeah, those signs, I see them all the time when I'm driving, you know, this, you know, just to highlight who actually mowed the lawn or who did the landscaping. So that seems like a great way to just have a constant billboard out there advertising your business. That's fantastic. Amazing. Eli, where can people who are interested in the dog walking business or the landscaping business find you? Where should we direct them to?
Yeah, you can follow Instagram. It's just at Ridgely Dog Walking Co.
And Ridgely is spelled how?
R-I-D-G-L-E-A.
Okay, amazing. All right, so Ridgely Dog Walking Co. on Instagram. We'll put that in the show notes as well. All right, great.